Barrett is a wife, mother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all struggle with in this conversation with a reluctant therapist. And Elizabeth, like the rest of us, you are aging.
Yes, I am. Okay. Right before your very eyes. Yes. Here I go. Is it my hairdo or what gave it away?
Well, I'm aging too, and I think most of us are.
I know, and I think given the topic of today, it's how we approach that aging process that most enhances the quality of our life. So do you feel like you're aging gracefully?
Some days. Seems like my 40s, though, just, you know, went by in a wink. You know, I recently turned 50, and not that recently, but yeah, and it goes faster and faster, I can tell you that much. I don't know about graceful.
I know. Well, I don't know. The closer we get to the end of the funnel, maybe the faster time goes. But yeah, it is an interesting thing. And now I guess I will own that with my moniker, I am aging. And maybe I'll wear it proudly as a badge, and then it won't be so daunting or overwhelming. And this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Happy to be here every Tuesday, no matter what the weather brings. Happy to be here. It's kind of a strange afternoon on the Central Coast. And it was interesting because as I drove into the station, and maybe, you know, I'm just noticing things differently. Maybe it's the lighting today. But there were thousands of birds, seafaring birds, seagoing birds, along the side of the highway. And it looked like they were flying in an updraft. I don't know. My engineer husband will probably be appalled with my use of the term. I hope it's correct. But it looked like they were riding the updraft along the coast. And it was really overwhelming. It was something to see. And it made me take a pause and experience the moment and enjoy it and breathe it in. Something that I've been able to do more of the older I get. Maybe as time goes more quickly, we stop and we breathe in life a little more often. So I guess I'm in that wistful space today, given our conversation that we're going to have today about leaning into life at a time when, or at the age when, most people are told it's time to start slowing down. And I was inspired by this because we've had conversations about aging, about old age, about death and dying. We've talked about it over the last few years. It comes up as part of that rotation of things in our life that are most challenging or exciting or overwhelming to us. But I always like to find a different take on it and see where we go with the conversation. And with this conversation, it's interesting how if you put yourself in certain situations, things come to you, right? Being open to new experiences or to new people or to new opportunities. And one of the great things about doing this show is that quite often people come to me, that someone will find the show on accident, they're, you know, flipping through the dial, or someone says, hey, check this out. And once in a while, these listeners will contact me through an email or conversation and say, hey, we have something in common and maybe we should have a conversation about it. And my guest today is someone who did just that. She was told to listen to the show, contacted me and said, hey, we have something in common. We're both graduates of the same program, Pacifica Graduate Institute, and maybe we should have a conversation. So I am delighted today to have Dr. Lois West Bristow in the studio with me. She is a resident of Saint Ynez. She is a lifelong seeker, full of curiosity, a successful mother, teacher, business owner, author, elected official, who returned to school. I think she would say she was called back to school, much against her will. Called back to school to earn two more degrees at the grand age of 76, and was granted her doctoral degree in depth psychology 5 weeks after her 80th birthday. And so I got a chance to have lunch with Lois one day, and we talked about her life now at the age of, can we say? Are you okay with that?
Yes, of course.
All right.
Yes. Well, I am 85 now, but next month I will be 86.
So on the verge of her 86th birthday, yes. Lois and I had a wonderful lunch conversation and said, you know what? I think we need to talk about where we get our inspiration to keep living life beyond our life expectancy. When you've surpassed what all of the statistics tell us should be your life expectancy, how do you continue to lean in and be inspired? And so today you've tuned in for a conversation with Dr. Lois West Bristow, who is going to share her wisdom and her inspiration and maybe some of her trials and tribulations in this conversation with a reluctant therapist. And you'll be invited to join our conversation as always. The number is 805-781-3875. You can also find out more about the program on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, our website, thereluctanttherapist.com, and you can always send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And this show, along with all of our other shows, are available if you visit our website, kcbx.org. Under the News and Talk tab, you'll find A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and all of our shows live there. So, having said that, welcome to the program.
I'm delighted to be here.
So, as I said, you know, you were called back to school.
Yes, I was nudged 76. Back, so pushed back.
Let's start a little bit with that.
Okay.
Why at 76 would you want to take on the task of a master's degree and a doctoral degree?
But I already had a bachelor's and a master's, and I didn't need another degree. And I've had all of my life, I've had what I call nudges, just a gut feeling to do something. And I've learned over the years that I'm better off following that than not. But this one was like outrageous. I thought, this is crazy. I don't need a doctorate. I didn't realize at the time that a second master's would be coming with it, but I didn't need that either. And I didn't want to work that hard, and the money was a huge amount of money. And so I decided, no, I wasn't going to do it. And however, I just went ahead and rounded up 50 years of transcripts in 10 different schools, which was a nightmare in itself.
Because you don't just show up and say, I'd like to sign up for your program, right? There's a process of having to apply and be accepted. And
right, and I didn't fit any of the lists of checkoffs, like your supervisor. I've been self-employed for 46 years now, and any super I had before that time is not around. And what were my career goals? At that point, I thought my careers are behind me and I'm going to do more sculpting and more this and more this. So I didn't fit any place. However, I did write to them a very brief paragraph about a crisis in my life when I came very close to taking my life. And I was jolted out of it by someone arriving. And then I found myself in the office of Hilde Kirsch, and I learned later, and I learned more about her in this program also, but I learned that she had taken all of her training with Carl Jung himself, and he had designated her a Jungian analyst. And that was a heavy influence in my gravitating to Pacifica. And my period of time with her, it's almost like it's changed the emotional DNA or something so that I looked at life with different perspectives.
So I think we need to back up, though, to put it into context. At this time you talked about was when you were a young mother.
I was a young mother and did not – and have three fabulous kids. I loved motherhood. I felt very, very trapped at that time in history in a divorce that was destructive, mm-hmm. in a marriage that was destructive, and did not see how I could take any way out. And that's many, many, many years ago in Water mm-hmm. Under the Bridge, but it was a trauma for mm-hmm. me.
And that led you into therapy, psychotherapy.
Yeah, it led
with
me
the
into
analyst.
Depression, which led me into therapy, which, yeah.
So then 50 years later, maybe.
Well, 75. 50 years later, right, by the time, yeah.
So 50 years later, this experience you had as a young mother becomes the cornerstone of your application to set yourself down another path.
Right. And I remember writing at the end that I felt perhaps maybe I was coming home to set the capstone, to integrate what I have learned with some, you know, academic program of demand mm-hmm. and see where that would lead me.
So with no career goals, but just curiosity of life, you enter back into schooling at 76.
Right. In a swift push from the gut.
And said, it's time to go. And so having gone through that experience of going to school, the reason, I mean, that's inspiring unto itself, that you would take that on. And I think one of the reasons I wanted to bring you to the show to talk about is I think that for many people, there are times in our life, transitional times in our life, and not just in technically old age, but at times of transition, maybe once our children leave home or once we've retired. Or it can even be once you've graduated from college at that young age of 22. These are huge life transitional places where people can find themselves in a rut or fearful or stepping back, you know, not wanting to lean in any further. They may feel that their usefulness has passed by. I know a lot of mothers feel that when their children leave home. Or for people who've retired, they feel like their years of usefulness have passed by. And then society doesn't help us at all because there's this societal message, right, that when we age, we become invisible. Mm-hmm. I've heard my mother say that there was a certain age she got to where no one noticed she was in the room. She could be standing in line and be overlooked, that there is an invisibility that comes with aging, or there's an invisibility that comes with not being employed and going through a period of unemployment, and then it becomes more and more difficult to engage.
You lose our identity. That is actually has a name and a process. It's called the liminal space when one leaves the fixed known. And you are kind of floating. And either you open up and go into a new arena of emotional connection and awareness, or you drop back and relive the old one.
So you can get stuck or you repeat?
You can break out of the pattern and go to another level of a different arena, mm-hmm. learn new stuff.
Right, that's the ideal.
Right, or you drop back and go through it again until it just is so destructive to you that you break away from it and you are again in liminal space. I wish I had known that when I was young, that I was really in some kind of official process here and not just falling apart. You know,
how empowering it would be for everyone going through a transition, no matter what it is, through grief or graduation or retirement or empty nesting or old age, right. To know that that is a process that you can move through and get to another side. And why is it that we tell people at a certain age, your processes are done?
Right. You can't do anything more. No, old age is a blessing. Every day is a day that you would not have if you had not gained in age. And so I, at 86, I look forward to 86. I've looked forward to 90. I look forward to every year that comes. Mm-hmm. And the only caveat I feel is I am grateful every single day that I am healthy and I take reasonable care of myself. And mostly I'm just blessed and I'm glad. But beyond that, it's like all of my relatives of my level are gone. Mm-hmm. And two of the next generation are gone. And it's a strange feeling to be the last one standing, the matriarch, the crone. Mm-hmm. And yet it is an honor. I'm privileged to be here. I am blessed to be able to be healthy and alive at this age and have stuff happening in my life. And part of that is you get up and dust yourself off and go keep going.
Well, and I think there's a certain level of having to not listen to the noise of culture telling you you're supposed to be something else. Because, you know, from a social scientist standpoint, we talk about aging. And in our culture, we basically look at aging as a biological phenomenon. That's all people recognize, right? That in our culture, you get old, you get wrinkly, you no longer have...
And you get sick.
You get sick, life diminishes, and you just wait to die. That we talk about that biological piece. And that's what drives our social message, right? And you talk about in your book, Death Comes Not as a Stranger, which we'll talk more about. That in our culture, you know, there are three goals.
Yes.
Don't get old, right. Don't get fat, and don't die.
Exactly.
And in some way...
Oh, there's another one.
Oh, there's another one. Okay.
You have to be happy.
Oh, yes. And
24/7, the shiny little stick, round sticker with this artificial smile.
And we talked about that last week.
Right.
About
it's the symbol.
The symbol right. of lifers. So those, let's say there's four goals. And if you fail at any of those, and we're all going to die, so we're going to ultimately fail at one, right. Then you have not lived up to your societal expectations.
Right.
So that biological aging drives that fear. But the fact is, aging really is psychological and social. And you talk about the psychological piece of being able to feel blessed. And I think, you know, a lot of people listening might say, well, my health isn't good and my life hasn't turned out the way I wanted to. And I do feel invisible. And so the psychological burden of aging can weigh us down even more than the biological.
Right. And it creates an emotional pot of boiling stuff that really cripples us, mm-hmm. that we're not okay anymore. And there's a lot of financial motivation to have you want to be young and have and fix yourself constantly so you won't look old. And who are they to tell us what is beautiful?
Well, and of course, beauty redefined with every society and every culture.
Exactly. And I believe should be redefined with every age. Mm-hmm. None of us look like that 6 months old, adorable, giggling, laughing, chubby baby, which is beautiful. But here we are, no longer wrinkle-free. But I'm very comfortable with my wrinkles. I just think it's a different kind of look. But that's who I am, and that's what I'm comfortable with. I like being in my 80s.
Yeah. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest today is Dr. Lois West Bristow. I told you I was going to struggle with that all day. Bristow. Yeah,
okay.
See, there we go. My guest today is here, and we're talking about aging. Lois earned her doctoral degree from Pacifica Graduate Institute at the age of 80, 5 weeks after her 80th birthday. She's looking forward to celebrating her 86th in the next month. And I invited her to talk about some of the joys and challenges of old age. And also, how do we encourage people of all ages to continue leaning into life when we feel like we're slowing down or we're discouraged or we've lost our way? And we invite you to be part of the conversation, 805-781-3875. We'd love to hear from you. What is your experience with aging? Are you leaning into it at whatever age that is? What do you find to be challenging or what do you find to be joyful? I think, you know, in all matters of life, there is the dark and the light. And the importance is how do we adjust to both the dark and the light? Or do you have a question for Dr. Bristow? What would you like to know about her journey through these years, her 86 years? And I'd also like to mention that part of this doctoral work and this process of learning mm-hmm. at an elder age, you chose to write about death as your dissertation. And I'm holding your book, Death Comes Not as a Stranger, Befriending Death and Finding Peace, which is available. And it was a fascinating
bookstores, Amazon, anywhere.
Anywhere. Yeah. So tell me about the
how
decision to write
to
about death
okay.
as you're trying to yeah. live.
Well, early in the doctoral process, since I had allowed myself 4 years, it's a 5 to 8 year program, but I'm not starting at an early age, and I had to get my act together and give myself a little kick.
Make it happen.
And make it happen. And right away, I wrote a paper which I called Increments of Transformation. And I was sharing it with another professor there who retired that first year I was there, marvelous woman. And she said, that's a perfect title for a dissertation. And I said, oh, I was going to do it on shamanism, and I'd already begun those studies. And she said, you will never be an expert on shamanism, but you will be an expert on the transformative process. And I thought, wow, okay. So I took every class, the theoretical premise of the class, and since I had a whole bunch of experience in my pockets, I would tie the theory to the reality of what's happened in my life. Mm-hmm. And come up with new insights, which I called Increments of Transformation. So I'm all set to go on that, and my advisor says to me, that's, you know, a little too vague. Why don't you focus on a certain area? And we're on the phone, and I'm listening, and as you know, I don't hear worth a darn. And he said, look at getting old. And I couldn't hear him, and I'm listening and listening, and he says, that's a strange silence. And I said, well, I'm waiting for you to finish the sentence. I didn't hear what you had to say. And he said, getting old and death. I said, okay, yeah, I can do that. I mean, get through the gate guards, Lois. You're going to do this. I can do that just fine. I'm comfortable with that. Thank you. Yes, uh-huh. I have a do not resuscitate on my refrigerator door, and I'm trying to convince him that I'm on board with this whole thing. In the meantime, I'm thinking how exciting it's going to be to focus totally on old age and death for 1 year. Actually, it was a phenomenal process. It was an exciting process. So the dissertation became the transformative process in old age that I was living and writing and learning about while I was doing it myself. And it was, I was so excited I wrote the book.
And
I didn't have it in my dissertation, just one chapter. The next book is called Huff and Puff and Pray to the Moon, Increments of Transformation, which are all the defanged academics out of it, stories on what I've learned from these experiences.
And I'm fascinated because you talk about in the book that you're not someone who, you know, jumped in and said, oh, I'm so excited about death. Let's talk about it and make it conversation. I mean, you had to go through a process yourself of...
Yes. I had to go through my own process to find my own way. I have always wanted to be there because I was so curious. I wanted to know what happened.
So you wanted to, you talk about in the book being conscious in your death.
I want to be conscious in my death. Mm-hmm. I want to be there to finish my life. This is... Life rarely turns out like people plan it to turn out. I mean, life has its own ideas. And we just run to catch up or get our breath or learn to how to make the best of it or create a new direction for ourselves. There are a lot of latitudes mm-hmm. there for us. But it's you're not born with what I'm going to grow up and I'm going to have a prince in charge. White armor or whatever the Princess Charmings wear these mm-hmm. days. And I'm going to have, you know, beautiful children that are not going to have any hang-ups because I'm going to be such a wonderful, wonderful mother and life is good. And life is life. And it has phenomenal experience and it has devastation. You fall off the cliff, dust yourself up, crawl back up, take a deep breath and go on.
And until we get to the death and dying part, right? And then we're told to numb out, disconnect, don't pay attention.
And be a non-person.
Yes.
Right.
Let the medical profession take over. You don't want to see this. Don't be there. We're just going to...
Right.
So in a society that says, we don't want to talk about death because we don't want to be fat or die or get old or wrinkled, and then you decide, because I think it's an interesting thing that you're leaning into your life and saying, I'm going to get a doctoral degree at 76, be done at 80, and I'm going to write about dying in the process of doing something so life-affirming.
I didn't decide to write about dying.
True. It was given to you as...
It was given to me as an opportunity.
Yes.
to be approved on the subject, which is one of the necessary components. But it was a gift. It was a gift. So many things that happen at the time, they're gifts, and they are wrapped in the crummiest wrapping and the ugliest box and gnarly ribbons that you don't know it's a gift. And you sometimes don't know it's a gift for years and years, and you stop and think, if that had not happened, I would not have changed direction in my life. And that's happened to me... quite a few times.
So at the end of doing the book, Befriending Death, mm-hmm. as it were, at the end of this process mm-hmm. for you, how did it change your experience of living?
There is a huge release of available energy to you. When you carry fear or carry anger, I have done both, you know, magnificently. Mm-hmm. To release those negative anchors that we pull, that want to keep us in the same spot, and we pull and move forward. When we don't have to pull them anymore, and we can really just let them go, we have all of this energy at our at our touch. We can then decide and do. And even, I remember one of the things when I was getting the doctorate, and I thought, well, what are my career goals? I don't have any career goals. I've had a lot of different careers, if you've seen my resume. I want to sculpt. I want to garden. I want to, write. But I didn't want it defined by a career. I am up to my eyebrows in a career change that is actually a modification, a picking and choosing of things that I have done in the past that I was reasonably good at and enjoyed. Write, speak, teach. I teach one-on-one. I teach life skills on how to untangle the knots, how to move past this. Where are some insights that you can gather to get beyond where you are, where you can tap into the gifts that you have?
You're listening to Dr. Lois West Bristow. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And the energy that you received by letting go of the fear of death, you write about in the book, which I thought was really fascinating, about ego. And you actually were quoting work from Mortally Wounded, Dr. Michael Kearney's book.
Oh, yes, yes.
And he talks about that we live our lives largely separated from our soul. And unfortunately, our egos get in the way because the ego doesn't want to have anything to do with the soul or anything of depth. It's all tied to the surface mind, those things that we are told to value in culture, right? Status and beauty and things and materialism.
And happiness. 24/7. Impossible.
And the ego wants nothing to do with depth or death. So when the ego is in charge, fears thrive. And so you talk about when you let go of the ego piece and you let go of the fears, all of a sudden you had this new engaged experience in living.
Yes, and a word of caveat. Mm-hmm. Those challenges come again and again. You let go of a certain batch of fears and you release that energy and you feel that surge and you go on. You hit some new ones. You're now learning how to do it. You know how to stop and really go into yourself to release these again. But you don't just have a little party with yourself and fix everything just the way it's supposed to be when you're 62,
So I'm not going to hit that ripe age and have it all figured out and just...
No. Oh. But you do become wiser and wiser and wiser. Somebody asked me once, wouldn't you just rather go back and at least be 72 again? And I thought, not on your life. Have to learn all that over again? I want to learn new stuff. Thank you.
So revisiting is not a plan for you?
No, revisiting. I visit and revisit some of the depths, replay what I learned where, remembering things that stuck with me that are just woven into my life, like the comment my mother gave me, and I remember it so well, and it is ingrained in me now, the knowledge that people want to be loved, to belong, and to be competent. And it's such a total consciousness. And it almost seeps into life situations without you consciously calling it up when it becomes so ingrained.
If you'd like to be part of the conversation, our phone lines are open, 805-781-3875 for any questions or comments for Dr. Bristow or... If you'd like to tell us a little bit about your experience with old age, what are those gifts you've learned along the way? How are you feeling about leaning into life when most people are saying it's time to step back? And what can we do in our culture to change the perception of old age and what we're capable of? We talked about Grandma Moses starting to paint at 76, and the woman who just completed her 16th marathon.
I know,
at the age of 92,
and she didn't fall down once,
which is a big thing. So where are you in this aging world? Are you stuck on the biological piece, or do you understand the psychological attitude piece, or the social phenomenon? What can we do as younger generations to change the social perceptions of what it is to be old in our culture? How can we make the process of getting older a time of wisdom and engagement instead of retreating and becoming invisible? 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of this conversation, and we'll be back to take your calls. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I am in the studio with Dr. Lois Wes Bristow, and we're talking about aging. Lois received her doctorate degree at the age of 80, 5 weeks shy of that, or post that. And she'll be turning 86 next month, and I wanted to have her come in because there are so many people that I know and love that have so many things to offer in life and feel like that they've kind of lived past their prime, or maybe, you know, there's no reason to go back and finish the unfinished business. And, you know, that maybe it's just time to sail off into the sunset. And I am constantly wanting to say, but wait, you know, there is always a reinvention possible. There's always, as long as you're alive, an opportunity to do different things. And you talked about the liminal stage, the space between an ending and the possibilities for new. And this liminal space of feeling like we're kind of floating and groundless and rootless can be very disorienting or unnerving. And in our desire to feel grounded again, quite often we can just jump on or latch on to something that makes us feel calm, or we can numb that floating feeling through drugs or alcohol or medications. But if we can trust that liminal space as a time of learning and opportunity, and then move to a new assignment, and we can find new purpose. And Lois, talk about, you know, the age as a number piece and how that plagues people.
I was a couple of years ago sent an email with this marvelous little clip, and the title was Age is Just a Number. And it was a 93-year-old woman dancing beautifully. Of course, she goes out on a stage in her walker and her cloak and hat and puts it all off and moves into the arms of this magnificent dancer. It's amazing how she dances. The world is full of phenomenal dancers. Mm-hmm. What was significant was that she was 93 years old. And she danced. Age is not just a number. Age is the number. It defines our time in history. It lets us know what the society demands were then, what the values were, what the patterns, the morals, the customs were. It lets us know how much of our lives we have used up. And it gives us some idea of how much we might have, because nobody lives forever. As Hausman would say, and dead men rise up never. No, that was Swinburne. I'm sorry. So, anyway, now more and more people are telling me, don't tell anybody how old you are because they would never know. And I said, but that's how old I am, and I really rather like it. And I feel fortunate to have made it to this point.
So your message is that the number is important. It's
very
important to
important.
Own it.
Yes.
And
yes.
Be the age you are at that time. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Vernon, you're on the air. What's in your mind?
Oh, I just think it's wonderful that we have someone sticking up for what we're all doing, and that's getting older. And in a culture where buying and working and never recovering seem to be very common. The older we get, the wiser we are with our time, I think.
And so how do you feel about aging? And I'm going to ask you, what's your number?
I'm 33. I'll be 34 this year. But as a young man, it was very easy to be told, hurry up and grow up, and then, oh, you're too old. Now you need to tone it down. And that's just amusing to me because we're all getting older.
Well, and I think it's interesting. I'm so glad that you called in at 34 because I'm always wondering, when is it that we stop noticing old people in culture? You know, do you still look around and engage with people who are older than you, or have you kind of found yourself isolated by your age group?
Previous years, yeah, isolation. I would say that's pretty common in youthful attitudes. We tend to, you know, seek our group and then stick to it until we get totally worn out. But I've been raised as a caretaker for elders. So personally, I think we need more elder caretaking. But also just in general, learning from our wiser benefactors.
Yes, to actually not just hear the stories, but to learn from them so that we don't repeat past mistakes. And that's what I find so ironic is that we can hear the quote over and over again, you know, if we don't understand history, we're doomed to repeat it. And yet we don't listen to anyone who's lived history. What do you think, Lois?
Well, first, I commend him at 34 to be really looking into the complexity of how society limits us in many ways by defining if you get older, and everybody's doing it, it's not a good thing. So congratulations.
And that you also, no matter what age you are, you're too old to be doing something.
You're
right?
Too old to be doing something, right. So now your question again.
Thank you, Vernon, for calling in. That was the funniest thing I thought of today is that Vernon's right. No matter how old we are, you know, when you're 7, you're too old to be acting like a baby. And when you're 15, you're too old to be acting like you're 10. When you're 30, you're too old to be acting like a college kid.
Right.
So at 86, what are you too old to be acting like?
You know, I am not running the marathon.
Okay.
Okay. There are things that I'm limited to. I no longer get up in ladders.
Okay.
Because I look up and I'm dizzy. And I fell off a ladder 10 years ago, and that I said was the finale on getting up on ladders. There are some things I cannot do, and I cannot put in day after day after day. My body just says, hey, lady, this day you're doing nothing. It's rest time. No, I've got it. No, you're just going to do nothing today. So there are changes. What I notice, too, that is the most annoying is the short-term memory. She's very clear to me. She says, if you want to work like a crazy woman when you're an old woman, that's just fine, but I'm out of here. I'm, you know, not going to be around. She comes back and she leaves, and sometimes I just have to wait 2 or 3 days for a specific name to come back to me, and then I write it down on my list of names so that when I need it again, I'll have it.
So it's about giving yourself grace, because I think, again, another societal norm is that if you're not sharp every second, then you shouldn't be participating in culture, right?
And then I say baloney.
And then you say baloney. Blue, you're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Oh, hi there.
Hi.
Let's see. I had a couple things, and then I was listening to what was on the radio about probably in the past, but about the grace of aging.
Yes.
That wasn't my comment, but I just was brought into that. But my question was that as a younger person, and I'm only in my 40s, so I don't really have a lot of authority to talk about the hardships of aging over 50 or whatever, but as a child, I watched the Golden Girls, and I always looked forward to being in that stage of life with my mother. And one of the biggest influences in my life was my grandmother. And she recently passed away at the wonderful age of 92. And I thought, she was 50 years old when I was born. And she's one of the most important people in my life. And at this age, I'm only 44. I'm not even 50 yet. And how this woman at the beginning of my life was 50. And she's made this profound connection in my life.
And at a time that a lot of people are told by 50 or 55 or 60, right, they have nothing to offer. And yet as a grandmother, she was everything for you.
Well, that's beautiful, really, beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So it is, you know, and I've had people in my life that unfortunately have not got to live very long because of illnesses and such. And so really, it's, I think it's such a gift to be able to age. And I feel so saddened by people that feel like their age is a debilitating factor to them, or that, you know, like they complain about what age is doing to them, when I think about, oh my gosh, this is such a gift, you should really embrace it. You know, not everybody gets to live to be 60. Not everyone gets to live to be 70. Like, this is a gift for you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for calling in, Blue. And that is a good point that you talked about earlier, Lois, is that aging isn't, you know, being 86 isn't just all a party, that living to 86 came with a lot of heartache. And it's how we accept the heartache and suffering that's really going to impact the psychological quality of old age. Because for a lot of people, there comes a point where they don't want to be losing more people. And I know for my grandmother, she got to a point, and you had mentioned you're the last one of your generation. She was done. She had no contemporaries around her anymore, and she was really saddened to be left. So how do we deal with that?
People deal differently from many perspectives. I think that if we can in general open up that every stage of life has its value and has its challenges and has its hardship. Little kids want to grow up so nobody can boss them around and tell them when to go to bed or what TV to watch or what have to eat, vegetables. And then when they're grown up, it's like, you know, this is really a drag. I have to buy my own groceries and pay my own rent. Maybe it'd be good to be a little kid again. So the acceptance that each age has its gifts and its challenges, its rough spots, its joys, and that doesn't change. There's not a nirvana time, or at least I have not found it. But there have been joyful, fulfilling, life-satisfying periods of time, the things we have done that teach us and strengthen us. And gaining new wisdom is a joyous experience. To understand something and have a new perspective. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to remember that we don't have to make all the mistakes ourselves, that mistakes teach us, but you can also learn from somebody else's mistakes. And so I tried to share in the book some of my mistakes so you won't have to do it. Just read what's happened over here.
Dr. Lois West Bristow is talking about her book, Death Comes Not as a Stranger, Befriending Death and Finding Peace. This book is available on all bookstores and websites, Amazon.
But they have to order it.
And you have to order it.
Usually not. It's in stock in a few, but it's, yeah.
And Lois is talking about her experience of leaning into life when most people are starting to kind of check out.
Or resist all of life. Like, I'm tired and I don't want any more stuff.
If you'd like to be part of the conversation, we invite you to call 805-781-3875. And that's also a great point, because I hear that a lot. I'm tired. You know, I'm tired of living. And again, to use my grandma's example, that she talked a lot about feeling tired and not having the energy to continue or to carry on. And so how do we, when we've experienced sadness and loss, and you do talk about the sadness and loss and grief you experienced in your life, you know, that you were able to, I think the theme maybe is consciousness, that you consciously grieved, that you consciously engaged, but how did you continue to find the curiosity or energy to want to?
You know, I would love to take credit for that, but I don't understand it. I think it was a gift curse with which I was born.
So a temperament then?
I don't know. I do know that I have always been curious and wanted to know and wanted to understand. And I have had great grief in my life. As you read in the book, my oldest son was killed in a freak accident. And I thought I could not live. I didn't feel that I could breathe when I got the news. And I mourned his death. I didn't walk down the streets block shrouded, but I mourned with abandon within myself and felt the loss of it completely through. I feel that when we take the grief into every cell of our body and process it and learn from it, then we can release it. We'll never, the missing will always be there. But I found after 10 years that there was memory and there was gratitude that I had him.
And so the process of understanding that grief may be 10 years and not 6 weeks is also important. I think a lot of us are told that if we're not over something in 6 months or a year, that, you know, this is the way our life will be forever.
Okay.
This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, Georgia. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi. Well, I'm just really enjoying the program and wanted to say hello. And I was going to say something, but now I just wanted to talk about grief and dying for a moment. Mm-hmm. Gosh, it's not what I expected to say. Actually, what I'm more curious about is our thoughts on euthanasia. Because, you know, to be able to die consciously is so important, I think, and I think it's just wonderful to grasp that concept. And if the chance arises where you are able to die consciously, you know, we're going to have to look at euthanasia as a community and a nation and a people so that people can have the chance to die with dignity and consciously. So I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Thank you, Georgia. What do you think, Dr. Bristow?
I don't think that something as drastic as euthanasia has anything to do with the capacity to die consciously, to be aware of those last moments, to acknowledge the love you have for family, to know that it's time and be ready, as I say in the last sentence of my book, standing on the edge of the river Styx and dip your toe in peace. To be ready to step into the darkness that we don't know and into the ultimate light that I believe we find. I don't judge anybody who has other feelings that I have. And I think that there are times, and other countries have taken this kind of step, and there have been movements here. When someone is in atrocious pain, there's no way to get out of it. Those are the things that family and individual consider. But it's not something that I've addressed in my particular arena.
But you do talk about palliative care and the difference between using every medical intervention and taking a path of acceptance and comfort.
I'm a believer in palliative care. Mm-hmm. I do not want any life-prolonging treatments when I am in the dying process. I want to be allowed to go and be made comfortable. And hospice has put that on the map for us.
Thank you for calling in, Georgia. And I think that is one of the conversations that we don't want to have, and again, you address it in the book, is that we need to talk about death and have a plan, just like we talk about our fire escape. When right. tragedy comes, we have to have a plan in place, and that palliative care or knowing that you want to be present at your death and that you want to talk about it is the conversations we need to start having, because pushing it off is how we get ourselves into trouble.
And she has courage to bring that up, because it is an issue that needs to be put on the table.
And all ages have to talk.
Right. Yes.
Susan, what's your thoughts today?
Hi, I'm 69 and a half, and I have a couple of things to say. One is that I have been astonished at how, as I get older, I become invisible. People like on the street don't see me. Not that I want them to look at me, but they look right through me in a way that I find kind of surprising. In a way, it's a relief, because I don't get, you know, wolf whistles anymore. But it's just a bizarre feeling to walk along feeling invisible, and particularly to teenagers. The other thing I wanted to say was that I couldn't agree more that death is not the enemy. when I think to myself, oh, gosh, I'd hate to get cancer or whatever, whatever, I think, well, how would you like living forever? How would you like that? And I'm immediately cured of my concerns. You know, I've lived to 69 and a half. I've had a great life. I do hope that we pass a death with dignity bill because palliative care is the greatest thing on earth. Hospice is the greatest thing on earth. But we should also, I think, have the option to say, I've had enough and I want my lethal cocktail now, please. That's totally different from euthanasia, yeah. Which mm-hmm. is, perpetrating that on somebody else. Okay. So those are the things that I wanted to say. I've been thinking more and more about how to arrange it so that I don't get stuck in the medical machine and end up, comatose in the ICU. I mean, I'm surrounding myself with people who know that that's not what I want, but if you get into the wrong hospital, you don't have any options.
Yes, you have options. I'm glad you brought this up. It's extremely important. To tell everybody doesn't do any good. You must have it written down in paper. There are resources everywhere. You can go on the internet and download the 5 wishes. Tells you how to plan so that you get palliative care where they keep you comfortable but do not keep you alive when you're non-functioning. You do have the power. It's important to take the steps. You can do it.
So 5 wishes, is that a website, Lois?
It's a document that was developed that's prevalent. You can find it at hospitals. They're really trying to get people to begin to make the plan. And when somebody says, oh, I've told them, you can't walk in and unplug life support systems because they say she wanted this.
So it's all
called
about
murder.
It's the conversation and the plan and the being conscious of the fact that we are going to die.
Right.
And to make the plan in ways is what you're saying is how we free ourselves to finally live. And this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. My guest is Dr. Lois West Bristow. Her book is Death Comes Not as a Stranger. And we're talking about living life to the fullest at 86 years old with doctorate in hand and book in hand and speaking on the radio. And inspiration. I wanted Lois to come in today to inspire anyone who feels like, well, I'm kind of past my prime, or I've already missed the opportunity to do that, to rethink that, to rethink what is ahead for you. Jen, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi. I was wondering if Dr. would like to say something about, I hear a lot of people say to older women, or say about them often, oh, she's trying to dress like she's younger, she's not acting her age, or she's not dressing her age. And it's not women who are trying to look young. It's women who are just very alive and vivacious and adventurous and spunky, and they're dressing like they feel. They're being themselves, and someone is trying to put them in a little box and say, you should act more dignified because you're 65, you know? And I say, go for it, act and dress however you feel. But I wondered if you would like to say anything about that.
Yeah, do you ever get criticism for who do you think you are speaking out and being an author and dressing the way you do? Although I must say that Lois dresses very stylishly.
Thank you. Low-key, you know.
But what about a society that says act your age?
When you have intense energy, and it's the gift curse with which I came into the world, people love you or hate you. It was very, very difficult to really learn that my energy did threaten certain people. I'm sad when it does, but it is there, and I accept that it's there. Basically, I turn inward in many ways to do what I feel is valid within me. And I go forward because it's easily, it happens very easily to be set back on some of your things. What are you doing this for at 80? My gosh, you must be crazy. And I say, well, everybody knows I'm crazy. It's not a problem. And go right ahead.
So maybe when it comes to dressing, we just wear it as a badge of honor, right? We put on our armor to say, here's who I am.
Yeah, this is who I am. And it doesn't have to be armor.
Okay.
It has to be your deep comfort with who you are.
Right. Yeah. Sandra, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind? Sandra, are you still there?
Hello?
Hi. What's on your mind today?
Hi. I just wanted to let Dr. Lois know how much I'm enjoying this interview and ask her if she would agree that I'm finding the lesson that I'm learning in this conversation is we all need to be interested in others to get the most out of life, because some of the things we're discussing, like the limitations we have, feeling invisible, the challenges that every age presents, I think can happen to anybody at any age. And in the same way that Dr. Lois came on this show, she's showing interest. She's involved. Mm-hmm. And I think that I know people that are older that I just think are the most wonderful examples and friends. And I am learning from this show, you know, if somebody feels invisible, no matter what they age they are, to pay attention, and it will enrich my life, and it will enrich the life of others. Is that kind of close to the lesson?
I thank you for calling in, Sandra, because it's a perfect way to wrap up the show today. What are those six lessons, Dr. Lois?
What are what successes? I think the ultimate success is to become at peace with and find contentment in who we are as an individual, warts and all, and what our value system and integrity patterns are, and there's something that we value. And that is contentment versus happiness.
And also, I think you had talked a lot about the key to life in curiosity, right? To never stop being...
Never stop being curious. Yes, I've always been curious, and it drove my parents crazy when I was very young. But yes, motivate, spin out a little curiosity, wonder about something, find out about something, take it a step further. It opens doors, and it can be a very exciting journey.
My guest today has been Dr. Lois West Bristow. Her book is Death Comes Not as a Stranger, Befriending Death and Finding Peace. Google it, and you will find out more about how to purchase this book. You have to order it through Balboa Press. Thank you so much for being on the show today. Or for Amazon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We both encourage you to live your life, lean into life, no matter what your age. And because Dr. Lois West Bristow's message is about seasons of life, to appreciate each season as you live it. And if you're lucky enough, you'll live many, many seasons. So we leave you today from a classic from the Byrds, Turn, Turn, Turn. Thank you for supporting Public Radio KCBX. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist.